Good afternoon. Thanks for being here on the last session on a Friday afternoon, the day before Queen's Day. This session will be about creating sites, site definitions, web templates, and custom code. First, a little bit about me. My name is Mirjam van Olst. I'm a Microsoft Certified Master in SharePoint 2007 and SharePoint 2010. I'm also a SharePoint MVP, and I'm one of the organizers for the Dutch Information Worker User Group. With the Dutch Information Worker User Group, we organize events once a month. If you want to come and look, you can register on the website diewoeg.nl. And we also publish a magazine also publish on the site. And for this special occasion, we printed the magazine. So before you go home, if you don't have one already, you can stop by at the Ask the Experts and come and pick one up. I work as a SharePoint architect for Avanade in the Netherlands. I started there on April 1st, so it's still very new. But so far, it's been very enjoyable. If you want to get a hold of me, you can do so via my blog, sharepointchick.com, or via Twitter or email. This is the agenda for today. We're going to talk about site definitions, provisioning providers, custom code, web templates, and site templates. Start out with site definitions. Site definitions have been around since SharePoint 2003, and they are templates that are stored in the SharePoint root folder, or as it's called now, the 14 hive in SharePoint 2010, on the SharePoint servers. Site definitions can be used by end users and can be called from custom code to create sites or site collections based on the site definition. Site definitions, if you deploy your own site definitions, have to be deployed as a farm solution. So they can't be deployed as a sandbox solution because they have to deploy files to the file system. You need at least the following files. You need a webtemp something.xml file, which is stored in the template 1033 or your own LCID /XML folder, again in the SharePoint root. And you need an onet.xml file that's stored in the site templates folder in the SharePoint root. In the webtemp file, you define the metadata and the configurations for that site definition, the name, the category it will be displayed in, stuff like that. And in the onet file, you define the configuration of the site itself. So what does the navigation look like, what list instances are on the site, what pages are created when the site's created, and what features are activated. If you deploy a site definition, it will always be available throughout the farm. You can hide it from the user interface by using the hidden is true attribute in the webtemp file, and it can be hidden in subsites by using the available webtemplates property, but that's only available on publishing sites. And otherwise, you can use the visibility feature dependency, which is a feature that if that feature is not activated on the site template or the site definition won't be available for end users to use to create sites based on that site definition. All site definitions, your own as well as the out-of-the-box site definitions, inherit from the global site definition. And the global site definition is stored in its own folder underneath the template folder. The visibility feature dependency can be assigned for the configuration element of a site definition in the webtemp.xml file. So you basically use this to hide a configuration of the site definition, so a type of site, based on whether a feature is activated or not. And you can see in the code, maybe, hopefully, on the bottom here, that it says feature visibility feature dependency, and then it's a GUID, and that's the feature GUID that has to be activated in order for the site definition to be visible. This is the site definition creation process. The first thing that happens if you create a site based on a site definition is that the URL for the site will be reserved and it will be stored in the database, in your SharePoint content database. You can always tell, because if something goes wrong in this process, it fails somewhere, an error occurs, the site might not be accessible, but if you try to create a site again with the same URL, it will usually say that the site on that URL already exists, and that's because the URL was already stored. So you need to delete the URL from the database, not directly from the database, by deleting it using PowerShell or STS-ADM. And only then you can create the site again. And the second step is that everything that's in the global onet.xml will be provisioned for that site that you're creating. So the lists, the navigation, the libraries that are in the global onet.xml will be, everything in there will be put on the site. That's the first step. The next step, if you're creating a site collection, so top-level site collection, is that site collection scoped features that are defined in the onet.xml file will be activated in the order in which they are defined in the onet.xml file. If you're creating a subsite, SharePoint will verify that all the site features that are defined in the onet.xml file are indeed activated. If they're not, SharePoint will throw an error. In SharePoint 2007, it would activate those features for you, even if you were creating a subsite. In 2010, it won't do that. So it will just throw an error, and you have to activate the features that you need yourself on the site collection, and only then you can create the subsite with those site features in it. So if you want to create a site collection or a subsite with site-scoped features in there, and you don't know whether they will be activated, you will have to create a web-scoped feature that will check whether they are activated and activate them from that feature if you really, you know, want to make sure that you can create your site. The next step after activating the site-scoped features that were defined in the onet.xml is that the stapled features with the scope site collection are activated in a random order. So you can't define the order in which the stapled features are activated. SharePoint will decide on the order that it activates those in. Next, we will activate the site or SP web scoped features from the onet.xml in the order in which they are defined in the onet.xml. Then we activate the site scoped features that are stapled to the site in a random order. Then we create the list instances from the onet.xml that are defined in the onet.xml itself. And the last step is to create the modules that are defined in the onet.xml. And those modules is what contains the pages, usually. So the last step of your site provisioning process is creating your default.aspx page for your site. And that's very important if you want to create a feature that moves web parts around on your page, because that feature fires somewhere up there, and your page is created here. So that's a problem. You can't move a feature around on a page that doesn't exist yet. One thing that you can do if you create your own site definitions is create full-blown custom site definitions where you describe the complete configuration of your site in the onet.xml file. Doing this is strongly discouraged in SharePoint 2010 because of maintainability and upgradability. Changes within Microsoft suggest that in the future, custom site definitions might not be allowed anymore. So if you now create a site based on a site definition, you will have to create one in the next version as well in order to be able to upgrade. So it's better not to do that. And also, once you created a site based on a site definition, you're not allowed to modify that site definition anymore. You can't change the onet.xml from a site definition that already has sites created based on it. So it's very difficult to maintain a template like that. What you would have to do is make the site definition hidden, the one that you used, create a new one with the same, at least the same display name for an end user, and then make sure that users for a new site use the new site definition. But you would end up with a lot of site definitions that are basically deprecated on your file system if you do that often. So that's not a very good model for maintaining your site or your definitions. You can also create minimal custom site definitions. That basically means that you drop all the content from your onet.xml, and the only elements that you store in the onet.xml itself should be the features that need to be activated in a specific order. So for instance, publishing features. You first have to activate one feature, and then you can only then you can activate the next publishing feature. So those are features that you would want to define in your onet.xml file, so you are, can be sure that they are activated in the right order. You also need a navbar element in your site Because if you don't have any navbars in your site, you won't be able to change the navigation from the UI. I will show you where that is at later in the demo. You won't use modules to create the pages if you create a minimal site definition, but you will use features to create lists and pages. So you will basically create a feature that provisions the pages for you, which also means that creating the page moves up in the process. It will be done sooner, so you can actually make modifications to the page, add WebArts to it maybe, or move WebArts around on it. So that's another benefit of provisioning your pages in a feature instead of using modules from a site definition. You could execute code after site creation to make extra modifications maybe to your site. You can do so by using feature activation. So provision the welcome page from a feature, as I just said, and then associate another feature that will be executed after the page has been created, and that can fire code and in the feature receiver and make changes to your site that you might need. Maybe change permissions on your site after the site was created, or maybe change navigation in the site. You can also create a web control, place that on a page that will be executed only once. And this is the strategy that you would use for my site customizations. That's a completely different topic because it's a really difficult and long topic. But because you can't use can't change the out-of-the-box my site definition, this is an option that you can use that is supported, so you can make changes to the my site that users create the first time that they access the site without becoming in a non-supported state with your environment. You can also use the execute URL. The execute URL has been around since SharePoint 2003, so we don't use that a lot anymore. But it's basically an element in the onet.xml that will redirect the user that creates the site to another ASPX page, and in that ASPX page you can run any code that you like. So it redirects to your custom ASPX page. Obviously, that means that the user will see the redirect. So the other two are a bit more invisible for an end user. There's a couple of new events, the web provisioning events, that can also be used for executing code as part of the site creation process. These are only available on subsites, so they're not available when you're creating a site collection. And there's an example in here. There's two events. There's the web provisioned event that will fire after the site has been created, and there's the web adding event that will fire while the site is being created. And you can add classes and assemblies to it that will allow you to run code during or after the site's created. This is the same slide. Feature stapling. You can use feature stapling, which means you have a feature that references both other features and the site definition to modify, for instance, out-of-the-box site definitions. Because you're not touching the site definitions, but you're just creating the new feature and you create a feature that staples the new feature to your site definition, you're not modifying the site definition itself, so that's allowed on out-of-the-box site definitions. You can also use it to customize your own previously deployed sites, site definitions that already have sites created on it. Because you're not touching that site definition either, so you're not modifying the onet.xml, you're just adding features. Obviously, that only works for new sites that are created based on the site definition. It doesn't work for existing sites. You can't staple features to blank sites. The blank site doesn't have any feature stapled to it. Feature stapling is disabled for it because a blank site doesn't even have all the stuff from the global onet.xml on it, because if it had, it wouldn't be a blank site anymore. But that also means that you can't staple your own features to it because that's disabled on it. A little trick is to staple content to the global site definition if you want to use a feature in all sites that are created within your environment. If you think, for instance, about a design that you want activated on all sites within your environment, you could staple that to the global site definition. There's one gotcha, except for the blank sites. You can't use it in a multi-tenant environment because this is a farm feature. It's a feature that's deployed throughout the farm. So it means that every customer within your multi-tenant environment would have the same design, and that probably wouldn't go down very well. So this is only useful if you only have one customer, one company deployed on your server, and you don't need differentiations of that feature. The stapled features are activated before the lists and the modules are provisioned, and the order in which they are activated is random. So those are limitations that you need to think about when you're creating stapled features. What can you do in the features? What do you want to do in the features? And you have to basically be smart about how you set this up to make sure that you can do everything you like and you don't get in trouble either with the order or with the pages and the lists that aren't there yet. A couple of best practices: if you are using your own site definitions, if you're creating your own site definitions, make sure you use minimal site definitions. Use features if the order in which they are activated does matter. So place them in the onet.xml, and use feature stapling if the order in which they are activated doesn't matter. So you keep your onet.xml files from your site definitions as lean as possible. And don't change the site definition after a site has been created based on that site definition, because that's not supported. And I know that most of the times it will work, but there's going to be a case where it doesn't work, and then you're in trouble. Going into my demo. This is my environment. This is just a basic portal created based on a normal out-of-the-box team site, nothing special in here. If I go into site actions, I can create a new site, and you can see all the templates in here. These are the out-of-the-box templates. There's nothing fancy about this. You can see several categories in here. I don't know the exact number, but it's not a whole lot. If I go onto the file system and I browse to my SharePoint root folder, this is my SharePoint root, I go into templates and then into site templates. This is the folder that has all the site templates in there, so all the site definitions that are out of the box in here. You can see that there's a lot of them. So these are more site definitions than you can see from the UI. So a lot of these are hidden. Some of these are only here for backwards compatibility purposes. A good example of that is the site directory site definition. In SharePoint 2007, a lot of people use that to store the metadata of their sites, of the sites that were created in their environment. And it's not there anymore. You can't create it through the UI. Now on the internet you can see a lot of blog posts saying, oh, but it's still there, it's on the file system, so you can just use PowerShell to create a site based on it. Well, that's true, but the reason that the site definition is on the file system is because otherwise you wouldn't be able to upgrade your SharePoint 2007 environment to SharePoint 2010. It's not there for you to still use. It's hidden for a reason. So if you want to use a site, a template like that, create your own, or, you know, download one from the internet, because there's also a lot of people that already created a site template like that for SharePoint 2010 without using the out-of-the-box one, and that's supported. So it's better not to use deprecated site definitions or hidden site definitions. They're usually hidden for a reason. So this is my list of definitions. If I go back into my template folder and I go into 2033 into XML, this is my list of webtemp files. So there's not as many webtemp files, and that is because several site definitions are mentioned within one webtemp.xml file. You can see there's the normal basic webtemp.xml file, the third one from the top, that has the team site in there, the blank site, the document workspace, and then there's the SPS one that has the publishing templates in there, search templates in here. So they're grouped together in these files. If I go into my webtemp.xml file, you can see that there are several here. There's a template STS, that's the normal team site. try to hide that one. Here's the zero, that's the global setup path. And ID2, basic meeting workspace, central administration is listed in here, wiki, blog. So you can see that there are a lot of definitions listed in one webtemp file. And you can do the same if you're creating your own site definition. So you don't have to create a webtemp file for each site definitions. And what a webtemp file holds is basically the metadata for your site. So the title of the site, the title that users will see when they're creating the site, whether it's hidden or not, the image that's displayed in the site creation screen, a definition or a description for the site, and a category. Close this one. Obviously, we can also create our own site definition. We don't have to use the out-of-the-box one. So I'm creating a new Visual Studio project. And when I want to create a site definition, I have to use the site definition project type. I can't use an empty SharePoint project, because then I'm unable to select the site definition still. I've been thinking about why they might have done that. One reason is a site definition can never be deployed as a sandbox solution, so they actually filter it. If I create this, I can only choose farm solution. And another reason could be that if you put your site definition in the same solution as your feature, you might want to upgrade your feature, but you're not allowed to touch your site definition. But by default, if you redeploy the solution, it will update the site definition as well, even if you didn't change anything in it. So that could become very confusing, and especially for a developer working on the solution, you know, making a little change to the definition is very easy. And this way, it's actually separated out completely. So I'm changing the name to DevDay site definition, and I create a project in here. It deploys to my local SharePoint farm, and you can see it deploys as a farm solution, and there's no way for me to select deploy as sandbox solution in here. So the solution is set up, and it will have a site definition in it by default with a default.aspx in there, an onet.xml file, and a webtemp file that also has the name of my site definition in there, so you can't create duplicates. If I open up my onet file, it's still pretty much empty. There's one configuration in there, but there's nothing in the configuration. If I open up my webtemp file, it's all pretty much empty. There's a title in here. I can change the title to my fancy sites, and this is what an end user will see when he creates the site. There's an image. I could change the image if I want to. It's not hidden. I can alter the description. Very cool, fancy site. And I could change the display category. And I could change that to being DevDays. So this is the metadata of my site. It's not the content of my site. If I go into my onet.xml file, I can actually fill in the contents. Now, because I'm lazy and I don't want to show you how I'm typing XML for a good 15 minutes, I will copy the contents of the standard team site onet.xml, which is in here in the STS folder, in the onet, in the XML folder. Open this one, just in Notepad. What I'm going to do is copy the navbar section from this. Again, you can't leave the navbars empty. If you leave them like this, like they are by default, then you can't alter the navigation from the UI. And the only way to fix that is to recreate the site. So if you create a whole bunch of sites based on a template that doesn't have any navbars in there, you have to recreate all of that. I found that out the hard way, obviously. I'm going to copy the configuration or the contents of the configuration. So features, web features, site features. Copy. See if I've got everything. Yep. And I copy that in here. Okay. In this configuration, it refers to a module that's called default. But in my site definition that Visual Studio created for me, it's the module is called default blank. So I will rename this module to default blank. So it actually refers to the module in my site definition. So scroll down a little bit, and I also copy the contents from the default module from the standard team site into my own site definition. Obviously, this isn't a very useful exercise, because if I would do this in a real environment, I could just as well use the out-of-the-box team site. But you get the idea, you can modify all this and take your time looking at it. I can save this, and I can deploy my solution now, and that will deploy the site definition to the file system and make it available throughout my environment. The deploy succeeded. If I now go into my site templates folder, I should see a DevDays site definition in here. So that worked. At least it went to the file system. If I go into my environment, and I have to close this page and then reopen it again, create a new site, I have a category DevDays with my fancy site in it, and I can create a site based on this. So DevDays, and the URLs DevDays as well, create. So this will process the onet.xml. It will first reserve the URL for me, process all the features that are in the global onet.xml, then process the features that are in my onet.xml. There are no stapled features, so that's not on here. And then it will create lists and pages for me. Well, you can see the site's created. Obviously, it looks a lot like the out-of-the-box team site, because that's the contents that I copied in here. And this just works. Also, if I go into central administration and go to application management, I click create site collection. In here, this site definition will also be available. Selecting my portal. Here you can also see the DevDays tab with my fancy site in there. So I just did a deployment, and I can use my site definition both for creating site collections and subsites. And it will be available in every site throughout my environment. So if I go into another web application, I can also create my fancy site from that web application. Moving on. Provisioning providers can also be used to create content when you're creating a site, or to provision sites from templates. And they can be used to fully customize the provisioning process by using custom code. And they can also be used to create a hierarchy of sites. A good example of this is the out-of-the-box publishing portal. If you ever created a publishing portal, you know that it creates a homepage, press releases, and I think there's a search page in there. The onet.xml file, if you use provisioning providers, gets replaced by custom code. So it doesn't process the XML anymore, it processes the custom code instead of the XML in your onet.xml file. This is an example of the publishing portal provisioning, so this is out-of-the-box stuff. This is the blank internet container, that's the site I was just talking about, and has a long description, and you can see that it has a provision assembly in it, which references the assembly where the code's stored in that I want to use to provision my site. There's a provision class and provision data. The provision data is an XML file that stores properties and the hierarchy of the sites that I want to create. In this case, this can only be created as a root web, so it can only be used to create a new site collection. It can't be used to create subsites. And categories publishing and the visibility dependency in there. You can see that you can only create this portal if you have publishing features enabled. So this is the hierarchy that it creates. It creates a homepage and two subsites underneath the homepage. The contents up there, the XML, that's the contents of the XML file that was stored in the provision data property, or that was referenced to from there. That's stored in the template XML folder as internetblank.xml, and you can see in there that the XML actually defines the hierarchy. There's a top web called home, and there are two sub-webs, press releases and search, with different properties. And in here, this XML references for each of these subsites, or for each of these sites, a different site definition and a different configuration ID. So they're all different sites, they're not the same. The provisioning class gets defined in a webtemp.xml file, and you can use properties to help you write your code. And the custom code is used to provision the actual site. Usually, from the custom code, you will still call spweb.applyWebTemplate to actually call a site definition and get some of that stuff provisioned in there anyway. If you do that, you have to be careful for an infinite loop. If you apply the web template that you just used, and that will call itself again, it will create an infinite loop and create subsites still all eternity. The class, if you create your own site provisioning provider, has to inherit from SP web provisioning provider. That's a bit confusing, because before I was talking about the web provisioning providers, and that's a different thing. But it's still called SP web provisioning provider. So that's SharePoint for you. In SharePoint 2010, don't create new site provisioning providers. There are strong signals from Microsoft that site provisioning providers will not be supported in the next version. So if you use this now, you could have problems with upgrading those providers. You can still upgrade the sites that you created with these, because the sites don't refer to the provisioning providers, the sites refer to a site definition. So created sites can be migrated, no problem. It's just migrating your site provisioning providers that could be a problem. If you already had provisioning providers in SharePoint 2007, you can obviously still use them now, as long as you realize that you might have to create another solution if you have to migrate to the next version of SharePoint in a couple of years. Site provisioning providers will always have to deploy as farm solutions, because there's DLLs that have to be stored in the global assembly cache, and there's XML files that have to go to the file system. So they can't be used in a cloud solution like Office 365. I can also use custom code to create sites. You will mainly use custom code to create your sites if you have an automated process creating sites. For instance, you have a CRM application, and from that CRM application, you're creating sites when a user maybe clicks a button, or when a certain value is filled in for a customer. It creates a site for that customer or for that order. Obviously, using custom code is very, very flexible, because you can do whatever you like with the site you're creating by modifying it in the custom code that you're running. If you use custom code to create your site, you will always use spweb.applyWebTemplate. So you will still use a site definition or a web template that you call from your code, because you need something to provision your site from. But after that site definition or web template has been called, you can modify the site as much as you like. So you're still in that process, you're still in your custom code, and you could basically undo everything that the Apply Web Template did for you if you wanted that. There's no link between the custom code that you wrote, that you used to create the site, and the created site itself. The site will only refer to the site definition that you applied. So it will never refer to the custom code. So you can move the code after you created the site, you can throw it away, you can change it around, doesn't matter. The created sites won't be bothered by that. Web templates is new in SharePoint 2010. Web templates are enabled by the new feature element that's called web template. A web template can be either site or farm scoped. If you create a site scoped web template, the web template will only be available within that site collection where the feature is activated. If we create a farm-scoped web template, the web template will be available in the entire farm, just like we just saw with the site definition. So if you want to create a web template and use it for the creation of site collections, you will have to make the feature that the web template's in a farm-scoped feature. Web templates are built using an elements.xml file and an onet.xml file. And the elements.xml file basically replaces the webtemp.xml file, so there's no webtemp in there. And there are a couple of other changes or differences. The onet.xml file can only contain one configuration, and that has to have the ID 0. So what we just saw with, for instance, the out-of-the-box team site, where you have the blank site and the team site and a couple of other ones defined in one webtemp file, and then a couple of configurations defined in one onet.xml file. You can't do that with a web template. So every web template needs its own elements file, and its own onet.xml file. If you create the web template as a farm solution, you can use a farm-scoped or a site-scoped feature. So you can choose whether you want to make the web template available in your complete farm, everywhere in your farm, or whether you just want to make the web template available on the sites or the site collections where you activate the feature. If you deploy a web template as a farm solution, the onet.xml file will be stored in the feature folder and the elements.xml file as well on the file system. So it will be stored in the SharePoint root slash features folder and then in the folder with the name of the web template. You can also deploy web templates as a sandbox solution, but only if you use the site-scoped feature, because you can't deploy anything that goes outside of the boundaries of your site collection in a sandbox solution. So you can't deploy a farm-scoped feature in a sandbox solution. But if you have the web template, if you create that as a site-scoped feature, you can deploy it as a sandbox solution. In that case, if you deploy your web template as a sandbox solution, both your onet.xml file and the elements.xml file are stored in the content database. So there's nothing that's being written to the file system. Everything's just stored in the database. This is what the web template element looks like. I don't expect you to read all this, remember all this, or even be able to read it. A couple of elements in here that are important. You can see that there's a lot of metadata that I can set on here. And this basically replaces the webtemp.xml file. So there's even more that I can define in here than I could define in a webtemp file. You can see here at the bottom, these are the most important elements within the webtemp file. You have the base template name that you need to define, and that will refer to the site definition that the web template inherits from. It doesn't really inherit, because at site creation time, when the site's provisioned, the site doesn't do anything with the site definition. It just uses the contents from the web template. But you still need to refer to a site definition. You need to refer to a base template ID, so that ID and the template name need to match. That needs to be of the same site definition. And you need to tell what base configuration ID you want to use. In this case, STS10 means that I'm using the out-of-the-box team site to basically base my web template on. At provisioning time, your site will just look at the onet.xml that you deployed with your web template. It won't look at the onet.xml from the site definition or any of the features in there. After the site has been created, the web template from the created site, it won't know about the web template. It will only know about the site definition that it referred to. So basically, once you created the site, you can remove the web template, because the created site has no knowledge of that web template. You can change it around just like custom code. It doesn't matter. It will just know about the web about the site definition that you refer to in your web template. So that means that maintainability of web templates is a lot easier than maintainability of a site definition, because in your web template, you can refer to one of the out-of-the-box site definitions. And if you want a new version of your web template for new sites that you want to create, you simply redeploy the web template with some changes in there, and none of the existing sites will be bothered by it. You can't use a web template to change an existing site, but you can't use a site definition either to change an existing site. So that doesn't really matter. You can also just throw out web templates that sites have been created on. Web templates can be based on publishing sites, and they can use the publishing feature. So they're not limited like site templates. And it will become more obvious why I point this out later. For an end user, there's no difference whether they're creating a site based on a site definition or whether they're creating a site based on a web template. It will look exactly the same in the UI. And web templates that are built as sandbox solutions can be deployed to Office 365. So you can design your own sites, your own type of sites, and deploy your web templates to Office 365 and have users create sites based on that template in the online environment. There are a couple of limitations to web templates. The first one's the module elements. It's not supported. So the module element that you use to define and create your pages within a site definition, you can't use that in a web template. However, you can use features to provision your pages, and as we saw earlier, that's a better idea anyway, because it means that you're creating the pages earlier in the process, and you can actually make changes to it if you want to, and you're more flexible as well. There's two other components that you can't use, the file dialog post processor and the external security provider. Who's ever used any of those? No, I haven't used any of them either, so that's no problem, we don't care about that. The same is true for the server email footer. In some of the out-of-the-box template that still has a value in there, or it's in there in an empty, just being empty, you can't use that, you have to remove it or your web template won't deploy. Another thing, you can't use feature stapling. Now that sounds quite bad, and I thought it was very bad at first as well, because you know feature stapling makes you very flexible. But when you think about it, it doesn't really matter, because you're allowed to change the onet.xml of your web template after sites have been created based on it. So instead of stapling more features to it or removing features, stapled features from it, you can simply just adjust the onet.xml, and basically that gives you the same result. Except for the fact that you can now define the order in which the features are activated. So it's even better. One thing that you really can't do, you can't create a variations hierarchy using web templates. So if you want to use variations and create your sites in different languages, web templates can't be used. And that's a real limitation. There's no workaround for that at the moment. This is the web template provisioning process, and you can see that it's shorter, and that's mainly due to the fact that there are no stapled features. Again, we start with creating the URL for the site and storing that in the database. Then we provision the contents from the global onet.xml, that's the same as well. If we're creating a site collection, the site collection scoped features from the onet.xml are activated in the order in which they are defined in the onet.xml. If you're creating a subsite, SharePoint will verify that the site collection scoped features are activated, and if they're not, it will throw an error again. Next step is to activate the site or web scoped features in the onet.xml in the order in which they are defined in there, and the last step is to create the list instances from the onet.xml. We don't have modules, so that step's not in here. That was, your pages will already have been provisioned in one of the features up there. If you don't add any pages to your site, you can't browse to it. I actually had someone report that as a bug to me earlier. So you need to create pages or you can't access your site. Oh, and if you use modules in a web template, it works, or it usually works, but it's not supported. So just create a feature to provision your pages. If you're using web templates, they can also be called from custom code, so you're not limited there either. They do look a bit different though, because you have to call them by using the feature GUID and the web template name. That's GUID and a name. Normally, or for a site definition, that would be STS1 for the team site, or STS0. So it's not that different. You have to know the feature GUID, so it's not as friendly, but as a developer, you will usually not have a problem finding the features or the GUIDs. And if you do, you're a bit in the wrong place in SharePoint anyway, because everything's a GUID, right? A couple of best practices around web templates. Use as little features as possible without being ridiculous, but each feature will make site creation a little slower. So you can put stuff in more than one module or more than one element, that's fine. But don't create a different feature for each site column that you're deploying. If you have like 100 features, that will significantly slow down the process of creating your site. Use a feature to provision the site's welcome page. That's not as much as a best practice as it is, you know, you need that. Another best practice is to store version information of your web template, of the web template that you use to create the site. What you could do here is create a hidden feature, so a feature that will not be visible to the end user, and activate that. Make it the last feature in your web features section of the onet.xml file that will be activated, so you know that once that feature is activated, everything else has worked. And you can use this feature to store the web template name and the feature ID and the version of your web template in the site's property bag. Because after the site has been created, the site is not aware of the web template. It's only aware of the site definition that you referenced in your web template. So if you go back to the site later on and maybe want to make changes to it or want an automated process to make changes to it, there's no way for you to identify what web template has been used to create that site. So in order to get over that problem, you can create a custom feature and have that store properties in the property back of the site. So that will really help you, especially in your application lifecycle process of the site. The fact that your site looks at the custom site definition also means, it looks to the out-of-the-box site definition, means that if you're upgrading your site that was created based on that web template, it just knows about the out-of-the-box site definition. And in VNext, Microsoft will make sure that in the next version of SharePoint, that site definition is available on the file system again. It might not be visible to end users, but it's just like the site directory template. It's on the file system. So you can be sure that you can upgrade your site without having to write your own site definition, recreating it in the next version again, because Microsoft has done that for you. So you can basically get the best of both worlds. You create your site with your own configuration in there by putting that in the web template, have your own onet.xml, put your features in there. But when you start to upgrade, it only knows about the out-of-the-box site definition, and you can always upgrade it. Obviously, you can have other stuff in your site that will prevent you from being able to upgrade, but it won't be the definition that the site was based on. So we're going to create a web template now in this environment. Going back into Visual Studio, I will close this project because this was, or close my solution, because this was my site definition solution. It wasn't an empty SharePoint project, and it was a farm solution. So I'm going to create a new project, and I can now choose the empty SharePoint project. I will call this my Dev Days web template. I can now choose whether I want to use a sandbox solution or a farm solution, and I will start out by using a sandbox solution. So what I'm building now could be deployed to an online environment like Office 365. So this is still empty, it has nothing in it, which is, you know, it's an empty SharePoint project, so that's good. I'm going to add an item to it, and I'm going to add an empty element to it. So this is my fancy web element. And SharePoint adds an elements.xml file in there for me. In this elements.xml file, I can choose to define my web template. So this is the new element that wasn't there in SharePoint 2007, but that was added with the new SharePoint 2010 version. In here, I can choose base configuration ID, which is 0. I have to add a base template ID, which was 1. Base template name, STS. As I said, during provisioning, SharePoint doesn't use the site definition that your web template refers to, but because of the upgrading, it's still good to choose a site definition that's sort of similar to what you're going to create. So if you're creating a publishing site, then refer to a publishing site definition as well. If you're creating something like a workspace, refer to a workspace. Just so it's as close as possible, which will increase the chances that in a later stage your upgrade will work fine. Let me see what else is in here. I can define a lot of stuff, but I won't define all of this. I don't need all of this. I can define a description. This is what the end user will see when they're creating the site based on this template. So this is my fancy web based on a web template. A display category, put it in the same category as the site definition, called Dev Days. A name, this name is important. The name that I define in here has to be exactly the same as the name of my element, of my empty element. So this was my fancy web. So this name in here has to be the same as the name of the my fancy element or my fancy web element in there. If it's not the same, your web template won't work. That's not obvious, and it's not enforced. And what else do we have? We have a title. So this is the title that users will see. So my fancy web. That should do it. This is just the metadata of the site, right? So there's no content in here yet, and I'm going to cheat a little bit. I'm going to copy an onet.xml that I already cleaned up. So I took the onet.xml of the out-of-the-box team site. I removed the modules from it and removed some of the content from it, removed all the other configurations from it. So I just have a configuration zero in there. So it's now in a supported state for being a web template. This is my onet.xml. If I copy it in here, it's by default goes to this no deployment type. I obviously want to deploy it as an element file in here. And once I add these files, they will be added to my feature automatically. This feature by default has a web scope, but in order to be able to deploy the web template, I have to change the scope to site scope. So in here, a site scoped feature. So I can now deploy my solution. And it will deploy the solution as a sandbox solution to the solution gallery of the site collection that was listed when I created my my solution. So I'm going back to my main portal and into site action, site settings, into my solutions gallery. And you can see that we have a Dev Days web template in here and was modified today and it's activated. So the web template should be available now to me in here if I create a new site. It used the same category, Dev Days, and you can see that I now have my fancy web in here. So create a Dev Days 2. Create a site based on it. Obviously the site itself won't be very exciting again because it uses most of the out-of-the-box team site stuff. And you can see here the site's created based on this template. Now, if I go into central administration again, and I go back to application management, and I want to create a new site collection, in my Dev Days tab here, I only have my fancy sites and not my fancy web, which is good because I deployed this as a sandbox solution that should only be available within the boundaries of the site collection that I deployed it to. And obviously, central administration is way outside of those boundaries. So I can't use this to create a site collection now. I could deploy the same sandbox solution to another site collection in my environment and use the template in there as well. But I would have to deploy the solution to each site collection where I want to create subsites based on that template. We might not want that, and if we're on an on-premise environment, so we actually can deploy solutions to the server, we can deploy farm solutions, we could adjust this, and instead of a site feature, we could make this a farm feature. And if we do that, we also have to change the type of solution from a sandbox solution to a farm solution. So it asks me if I'm sure that I want to deploy this as a farm solution. So now you can see that sandbox solution in here is false. Ooh, that's a bit dumb because I should have retracted the solution first as a sandbox solution. So quickly switching back to the previous settings and first retracting this solution because otherwise I end up with a sandbox solution and a farm solution that are essentially the same. Retraction successful, changing back to my project. Set the property to being a farm solution again and redeploy the solution. It's now adding the solution to central administration. And if I go back to my portal, and go back into site settings and solutions, you can see that the sandbox solution's gone. There are no solutions in the solution gallery. However, if I want to create a site, and I go to my Dev Days tab, you can see that the My Fancy Web is still available because I now deployed it as a FarmScope feature, which is available throughout my environment. So if I go into central administration and I refresh the Create Site Collection page, on the Dev Days tab, you can now see that I have a My Fancy Web here as well. So just like that, I can actually switch my web template from just being available within the one site collection and just being able to use it as for creating subsites, to actually it being a farm solution and being able to create site collections based on it. I'm not going to create a site collection because obviously the provisioning takes a long time. However, I will show you the farm solution just for a sec. So in here, you can see that besides my Dev Days site definition, there's now also a Dev Days web template deployed to my solutions, to my farm solutions store. Going back into my slides. Site templates. Site templates is what you get when you save a site as a template. In SharePoint 2010, that no longer creates STP files like it did in SharePoint 2007, but it creates WSP files. So saving a site as a template will get you a real SharePoint solution like you would get if you created a template using Visual Studio. Saving a site as a template will store the template, the WSP file, as a sandbox solution in the solutions gallery at the site collection level. If you save a site as a template, you can't have the publishing feature enabled on the site that you're saving. So that's the big difference with the web template. Basically, they use the same web template element, because that's why a save site as template now creates a WSP file. But if you create a web template in Visual Studio, you can use publishing features. Saving a site as a template using publishing features is not supported. The Save Site as Template link will be hidden from the UI if you have activated the publishing feature on the site. If you know the URL, you can still get to the page to save the site as a template, but don't do that because it can cause a lot of trouble. There's a reason why they're hiding it. And again, sometimes this will work, but other times it won't. We had a case where it worked for 24 hours, and then a timer job fired and the whole site was inaccessible. So then you have to explain to your customer why that happened. An end user, again, won't notice the difference between a site that he creates based on a site definition, based on a web template, or based on a site template. For an end user, it all looks exactly the same. As I said, the site template now uses the new web template feature element, so that's why we can create WSP files by saving site as a template now. Again, a site template is only used while the site's being provisioned, and after provisioning, the site only knows about the site definition that the original site was based on. So you can remove the site template after your site was created. Saved sites, so the WSP package that you create by saving a site, can be imported into Visual Studio. Theoretically, that's really good because you have someone functional designing the site, putting everything on it that you want on it. You export, you save the site as a template, export the package, import that in Visual Studio, maybe make a few changes, and make sure that you can deploy it across your environment. The only thing is, at this point in time, if you open the site in Visual Studio, it will generate a lot of files, which isn't really nice, and it's very difficult to make modifications to it. I once tried to clean it up, and then the whole thing broke. So you can, but you need a lot of patience to do that. So theoretically, this is a really good thing, and it can be used to adjust the site template after someone, you know, with functional skills that knows what the process or the site needs to look like has designed the site. Then you, a developer can import it and maybe modify it a bit. But I don't think it's yet feasible. But I'm pretty sure that it will be in the future, and maybe even in SharePoint 2010 with a service pack. So I will quickly show a demo of saving a site as a template. And what will happen? On my portal, I created a subsite called Template. So you can see beautiful design on here, really nice. This is approximately the level of my design skills. And in here, you can save a site as a template. I don't have any publishing features enabled on this site, so just save site as template, fill in a name, my template, template name, my template. I can fill in a description, which obviously would be useful for end users. And I select that I want to include content. The template's now being created, and it will be saved to the solution gallery of my site collection. So the same solution gallery where my sandbox solution that I created in Visual Studio was stored earlier. So I have to go back to my portal homepage, go to site settings, and into my solutions gallery, and you can see that in here my template's now stored. And my template will also be available if I want to create a new site. And this is stored in the custom sites. You can't change the category where this is displayed because SharePoint does this automatically for you. Obviously, if you would import it in Visual Studio, you could try to change the category. So we're now at Dev Days 4, I think. And we create a site based on this template. For some inexplicable reason, this takes a lot longer than creating a site based on your own template. Ah, there it is. So in here you can see that this is pretty much the same site that we had before because I saved this site as a template with the same beautiful design applied to it. So this is a really easy way for a user to create a site and create a template based on that site. Obviously, you can also first create a web template using Visual Studio, then have a user modify it and store that site template and use that template as the basis for creating new sites. And that will be especially useful within a site collection because deploying a site template as a farm solution could also be done. You can also use it in central administration, but think about the fact that you can create site collections based on something that an end user clicked. So that could be a bit dangerous. So a short summary. If you're creating custom templates in SharePoint 2010, creating web templates should be your first choice. They're easy to upgrade and easy to maintain, and they can be deployed as sandboxed and as farm solutions, so they will give you maximum flexibility. If you have to create a site definition, make sure that you create a minimal site definition. Put as little stuff in the onet.xml as possible, because you're not allowed to change the onet after a site has been created based on that. So less stuff you put in there, the easier it will be to maintain it. A site definition can only be deployed as a farm solution, so you won't be able to deploy that to an online environment. Don't use custom provisioning providers if you don't have custom provisioning providers already. So don't start creating new ones in SharePoint 2010. If you have an automated process that needs to create sites, using custom code is a very good solution that will help you to modify your sites and that will make you very flexible. And saving a site as a template is a valid option in SharePoint 2010. It's way better than it was in SharePoint 2007 with the STP files that we had, but it's still a bit limited in the fact that importing it in Visual Studio and redeploying it is still a little bit tricky. Are there any questions? Well, thank you very much for staying with me while the sun's shining outside, and have a very good weekend.